Welcome to Tardi Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Hochheimer, and today we will be studying Yirmiyahu, chapter 22. In the last parak, Tzidkiyahu sent two messengers asking Yirmiyahu to daven that Nebuchadnezzar abandon his siege. Yirmiyahu says that Hashem will not save Yehuda and Yerushalayim. Their only hope of salvation is to act justly and honestly. The theme of this parak is also about the importance of honesty and justice. This parak focuses on the kings of Yehuda directly before Galus Bavel. In verses 1 to 9, Yirmiyahu encourages the kings of Yehuda, the sons of Yehoshiyahu, to do a specific kind of tshuva to delay the Galus. From verses 10 to 30, he addresses his nevuah to three individual kings about what they will experience. In Sefer Melachim, we learned that Yehoshiyahu had Yehoyakim from one wife and Yehoahaz and Tzidkiyahu from another. Yehoyakim was the oldest, and then came Yehoahaz and Tzidkiyahu. Paronecho killed Yehoshiyahu, and the people appointed Yehoahaz, the second brother, in his place. His reign lasted 3 months before Paronecho took control of the region and exiled Yehoahaz. Paronecho installed Yehoyakim. Nebuchadnezzar conquered Yehuda in Yehoyakim's 5th year and exiled the king after a rebellion in his 11th year. He then installed his son Yehoyachin for a span of 3 months before he deposed him. Finally, Nebuchadnezzar installed Tzidkiyahu, who was the last king before the Babylonian exile. Divrei HaYamim has a different list of Yoshiyahu's children. They are Yochanan, Yehoyakim, Tzidkiyahu, and Shalum. Our parak addresses Shalum, Yehoyakim, and Yehoyachin by name. There is a machlokas who Shalum is, because we never hear about him in Melachim at all. The parak begins with Hashem telling Yirmiyahu, "Raid Beis Melech Yehuda, go down to the house of the king of Yehuda." The Radak says that Yirmiyahu is on the Temple Mount, so he needs to descend from there to the palace. Yirmiyahu has a wide audience in this parak. He is addressing the king, Hayoshev al Kisei David, who sits on the throne of David, all of his servants, and the nation who are milling about the palace. In the last parak, Yirmiyahu told Tzidkiyahu to do justice, dinu laboker mishpat, to justice with every morning. In this parak, Yirmiyahu tells the king and the nation that they should both act justly and give tzedakah to save their people. The Me'am Lois gives a mashal. Let's say a person has a child who is very sick with an infection. They might try one antibiotic and then another until they find the right one that will heal him. In the same way in a previous parak, Hashem recommended a medicine called Shabbos, which the nation rejected. Now he is trying to give the people a different medicine called justice with tzedakah. Justice fixes the physical world so it makes the nation worthy of redemption. Yehuda needs to change. Asu mishpat utzedakah, do justice and righteousness. The kings focus on justice, while the whole nation must give tzedakah. Vatzilu gazol miyad ashok, save that which is stolen from the oppressor. The Me'am Lois says that one who is oppressed often turns around and becomes the oppressor. The job of the nation now is to stop the cycle of violence. V'ger yasam v'almana al tonu, the stranger, the orphan, the widow, don't insult. Oppression often begins with verbal abuse against the most vulnerable. Al tachmosu, don't extort. After emotional abuse, criminals move on to financial crimes. And then, vidam naki al tishbechu b'makom hazeh, don't shed innocent blood in this place. Oppressing others often ends with physical violence. If the nation would just comply with these requirements, if they would just be honest, kind, and moral, then as verse 4 tells us, they would have a descendant of David on his throne and peace in the land. But if they do not listen, then the Beis HaMikdash and the city surrounding Yerushalayim will be destroyed. In verse 6, Hashem says he is doing this despite his love for Yehuda and the descendants of David. He calls the kings of Yehuda Gilad Atali, Rosh HaLevanon. They are like Gilad to me, the head of Lebanon. Gilad is one of the most choice sections of the area on the other side of the Jordan River. Yehuda, Hashem is saying, you are so precious, like Gilad is so precious in this region. But that won't matter if you don't do tshuva. What will happen to them? V'charsu mivchar arazecha v'hipilu ala ish. They shall cut down the best cedars and cast them in the fire. The Jewish people are compared to valuable trees, but if they don't pursue justice, Hashem will tear them down. This will shock the people, and they will question why this had to happen. The answer, as we have seen in the past, is that they abandoned the bris with Hashem and also served idols. The last two-thirds of the parak talk about specific kings. From verses 10 to 12, the pasuk talks about Shalum. Hashem tells them, Al tifku lemeis, don't cry for the dead. This is talking about Yehoyakim, who died on his way to exile. They shouldn't waste their tears mourning his death. when Bechu Balcho cry, really cry, Laholech, to the ones who are going, Kilo Yashuv Od V'ra'a Es Eretz Meladeto, because he won't return again and see his native country. This pasuk teaches that living in Galus is a worse punishment than dying in Eretz Israel. If Hashem decrees that a person should live in exile, we need to make the most of it, but it is still a reality to be mourned. Verse 11 tells us that this section is about Shalom, the son of Yehoshiahu. He was exiled, and, verse 12, Ki b'makom asher higlu oso sham yamus, the place where he was exiled, there he will die. Ve'sa'aretz hazos lo yireh od, and he won't see this land again. He was not just exiled from Yerushalayim, but from all of Israel. There are a number of opinions as to who is Shalom. Yo'achaz, Tidkiyahu, and Yo'achin were all exiled from Israel and died in a foreign land. Chazal and Rashi say that Shalom refers to Tzidkiyahu, who is blinded, which matches the text of our Psukim when it says he won't see this land anymore. And Tzidkiyahu is not mentioned elsewhere in the parak, while Yehoyakim and Yehoyachin, the two kings immediately preceding Tzidkiyahu, are mentioned. The Radak feels that the text best describes Yehoyachin, who is Yoshiahu's grandchild, and is also mentioned at the end of the parak, so it's a little bit of a difficult explanation. After Shalom, verses 13 to 19 speak about Yehoyakim, who was not righteous like his father. Harunacho installed Yehoyakim as a vassal, and then placed an oppressive tax on the people. Yehoyakim tormented the people to raise the funds in a draconian way. He also wanted to enjoy the lifestyle of the rich and famous himself, so he also needed to extort money from the population. In verse 13, we learn that Yehoyakim forced laborers to upgrade his home and didn't pay them. He undertook some very expensive renovations. He wanted to open up windows, which was very difficult with the technology that they had in those days. And he wanted cross breezes and large rooms that were paneled with cedar and richly decorated. The Malbim says that the fact that he included these excessive luxurious elements in his home proves that he had money and didn't need to steal the wages of the poor to improve his home. Yirmiyahu asks Yehoyakim a question in verse 15. Do you think you're going to rule a long time because you have a lot of cedar? Having fancy palaces doesn't make you a good or successful king. Yoshiyahu, Yoyakim's father, ruled differently. Avicha, halo achal v'shasa v'asa mishpat utzdaka, az tovlo. Didn't your father eat and drink and do justice and righteousness? Then it was good for him. Yoshiyahu didn't indulge. He ate so he could accomplish his goals of mishpat utzdaka, judgment and helping others. The Radak says that Yehoyakim would fast so he could atone for his excesses. Yoshiyahu could eat all the time because he was always balanced and kept things in proportion. Yoshiyahu would have meetings while he was eating lunch, as he cared most about his people, not his stomach. These meetings weren't for matters of state, verse 16, but were so that he could dun din aniv evyon, he could judge the cause of the poor and the needy. Yoshiyahu imitated Hashem by caring for the weak and the poor, which shows the close connection he has. Halohi hadas osi. Isn't this how he showed that he really knew me? In contrast, in verse 17, Yehoyakim was obsessed with money and would murder, beat, and harm others to get what he wanted. Verse 18, Lachin, therefore, Yehoyakim will die a violent death. His father had throngs at his funeral, but Yehoyakim, lo yisbedu lo, hoy achi v'hoy achos, they shall not eulogize for him, oh my brother, oh my sister, v'lo yisbedu lo, hoy adon v'hoy hodo, they shall not eulogize him, oh Lord, oh his glory. Yehoyakim won't even merit a proper burial. His body will be thrown out, kikvuras chamor yikaver, like the burial of a donkey. When Yehoyakim was captured by Nebuchadnezzar's men, he was being hauled off to Babel. The soldiers were rough, and Yehoyakim was very delicate, so he died in transit. The captors saw that he died, and they threw Yehoyakim's body out of the caravan and continued on the way. This was a tragic end to Yehoyakim. Verses 20 to 27 speak about Yehoyakim. As an introduction, Yirmiyahu instructs the listeners that they should scream loudly and publicly, Ali halavanon utzta'aki, go up to Lebanon and cry, ki nishberu kol mahavayach, for all of your lovers are destroyed. The Jewish people relied on Egypt and Assyria, who they assumed could repel Nebuchadnezzar's advances, but they are broken. In verse 21, it's the calm before the storm. There are no battles, so Yirmiyahu takes the time to warn the people to do tshuva. Of course they refuse, as they have always done. Things begin to fall apart in verse 22. Kol ro'ayach tireh ruach. The wind will feed upon all of your shepherds. their shepherds, their leaders and support will be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, who has been compared to the wind. Nebuchadnezzar destroys their internal leadership and their external allies. When this happens, Uz Tevoshi v'nechlam, then they will be very ashamed and embarrassed. They will see that they have no hope. Mikol Ra'asech, because of all their evil actions, they left Hashem and they relied on others, and now this is what happens to them. The Das Sofer says that between the fall of Ashur and the conquest of Babel, the Jews of Yehuda became wealthy, and they started to build for themselves new homes. You go into a wealthy area, you often see new construction and cranes all around. This was what was going on in Yehuda at this time. In verse 23, Yirmiyahu addresses the people. He asks them about how much of a difference these comfortable, luxurious accommodations will make. Bevolacha chavalim chil kayolida. When the pangs come to you, when labor pains start, when you're under attack, when you're being finally conquered by Babel, which will be happening, are you going to care about your decor? Are the kastim who are at your door going to care about your interior design? All Yehuda cares about is what others think and their material comforts, and those are going to be worthless very soon. Verse 24, Hashem swears and makes a decree about Kaniyahu ven Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda. Kaniyahu, who the Mepharshim say is Yehoyachin, the son of Yehoyakim, the king of Yehuda. Even if Yehoyachin is so important, like Chosem al Yad Yemini, as if he was a signet ring on Hashem's right hand, which a signet ring never gets removed by a king, not by day and not by night, Kimisham etekencha. From there, even from the closest place to Hashem, Hashem is going to remove him from his status. Yehoyachin is going to be sent into Galus by Nebuchadnezzar when his advisors convince him that Yehoyachin is not trustworthy. There were factions in Yerushalayim who wanted Tzidkiyahu to be the next king and not Yehoyachin. So Yehoyachin would fall, verse 25, Yad mevakshei nafshecha, in the hands of those who seek your life, meaning these factions, and in the hands of the people he fears, who are those from Yehuda who are conspiring against them. He will be exiled by Nebuchadnezzar and the Kazdim, who will have no pity on him. In verse 26, Yirmiyahu says that Yehoyachin will be taken with his mother to a place where he was not born. In this new land, you have no family connections, and so it will be a harsh experience where nobody is going to protect him. Visham tamusu, and there he will die. Yehoyachin and his mother and all those who are exiled keep hoping that they will get to return to Israel, but they won't be able to. The Malbim says that after Tzidkiyahu rebelled, Yehoyachin thought maybe this is his chance to reclaim the throne. It did not help, says the Radak, that there were Nevi'ei Sheker in Israel and in Babel trying to convince the people that they were going to return at any moment. Therefore, the Pasuk tells us Yehoyachin and his mother are going to die in the land where they are exiled. Verse 28, Yirmiyahu laments the fate of Yehoyachin and those exiled with him. He says, is Kaniyahu like ha'etzev nivze nafut, like a despised broken image? Is he like a kli in chefetzbo, a vessel that's not wanted? Yehoyachin had positive qualities. So, madu hutlu, why did they cast out hu vizaro, he and his children, v'hushlechu al ha'aretz asher lo yado'u, and he were thrown out into a land that they didn't know? Hashem answers verse 29 in a very mysterious way. Eretz, 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 shimi dvar Hashem. Land, 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 hear the word of Hashem. Yirmiyahu is screaming out to this land that is more special than all the other lands, any other geographical region in the world, and reminding that one has to live differently when they're living in this land, otherwise they will be punished. And because they did not live differently, because they did not live elevated lives, there was a decree on Yehoyachin. Kisvu es ha'ish hazeh ariri. Record that this man should not have any children. Gever lo yitzlach b'yamav. One should never be found acceptable in his days. Pasuk is emphasizing that Yehoyachin won't have a successor while he is alive. As long as he is alive, ki lo yitzlach mizaro ish yoshev al kisei David u'moshel ol bihuda. None of his children will be successful to sit on the throne of David and to rule again in Yehuda. If Hashem is declaring here that Yehoyachin won't have children, how do we have Mashiach coming from David? According to Chazal, when Yehoyachin was exiled, he was childless. He did tshuva, and his wife came to him in jail. There, his son Shaltiel was conceived. Chazal say that we learn from here the power of galus to atone for sins and the ability to remove bad decrees, as Yehoyachin was not meant to have children. Zerubbabel, Yehoyachin's grandson, returns with the Shivas Sion to those who returned to Israel for the second Beis HaMikdash, which was after the death of Yehoyachin. This parak begins with a solution to prevent galus that the people were not interested in. Yirmiyahu tells the palace that they can prevent death and galus by creating a just, moral, and generous society. Yirmiyahu then transitions to discussing the horrific outcomes for three kings, the descendants of Yoshiyahu, Shalum, Yehoyakim, and Yehoyachin. Each suffers in tragic ways after they did not do tshuva. Yehoyachin's life is going to improve after he does do tshuva. We can learn a lesson from this parak. Hashem has a solution to prevent the churban, the destruction that is described in this parak. That solution is to live a life of mishpat and staka, justice and generosity. We should always strive to be honest and kind and compassionate in all our speech and deed in interactions with others. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmas, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bas Alexander Sender.